Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. September 19th, 2014. Boy, the summer has flown by. Last weekend of the summer. I hope it's been a good summer for all of you, that this past week has been okay. But although the situation continues to get crazier and crazier when we talk about national security, the threats posed by ISIS, other terrorist organizations, not just to America, not just to the countries in the Middle East, which is certainly a hotbed for crazy stuff, but even Australia this past week. But we'll get to that directly. But meanwhile, those of you who are new to my program should know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Began my career back in 1971, and ever since the attacks of September 11, 2001, which happened right here in my hometown of New York City, I have been determined to provide my perspectives to the citizens of our country, to the supposed leaders of our country, so that they truly understand, and that so you truly understand, the real importance of border security, the real importance of the effective and fair enforcement and administration of our immigration laws. And you know, both our borders and our immigration laws are, after all, America's first line of defense and last line of defense, and not just against terrorists, but against spies, against aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are mentally ill and prone to violence, convicted felons, human rights violators, terrorists, war criminals, human rights violators, and people who would take the jobs that Americans desperately want and need. That's not my hunch. Pardon me. I've got a little frog going on here. Lots of conversations today. Been on radio programs earlier and a television show at Newsmax, and I think my throat has just about had it for the day, but we will soldier on for this next hour, hour and a half. But, you know, the bottom line, folks, is that if we don't secure the borders and we don't keep the bad guys out, we cannot defend ourselves. It's as simple as that. And that's the message of my program. On some occasions, I bring on guests with me to discuss particular issues, not just about immigration, but about other areas of great concern. But today, I've decided to fly solo because there is so much going on with ISIS, with terrorism, with immigration, and with knuckleheaded politicians, and forgive the redundancy in that term. Obviously, not all politicians are knuckleheads. There are some real good guys and good gals out there trying their best. But unfortunately, you have to cast a wide net to find just a few good guys in that crazy business. But in any event, let me start out by recommending that you go visit a couple of websites that are near and dear to me. Obviously, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, I am a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. CAPSweb.org is their website. They are headquartered in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Been out there a bunch of times. Great place to visit, especially in the winter. But they really do a tremendous job of highlighting the dangers that we face, not in California only, but across the United States, because this administration in particular, but let's be honest, this has been going on for decades. This crisis has not simply been thrust upon us within the last 6 years, but certainly it has picked up speed and momentum in ways unimaginable because of the Obama administration. But this is a crisis for all of America. This is an issue for all of America. The impact of illegal immigration and legal immigration that lacks integrity does great harm, costs lives. And we'll get into all of that this evening. But again, please go visit capsweb.org. In fact, my latest commentary focuses on the nexus between immigration and the threats posed by ISIS. So it's a timely article. It's one that I hope you find interesting, informative. And if you like the materials, please forward it to as many people as you possibly can. As I like to say, I am attempting to create a bucket brigade of truth. And in that vein, by the way, I have also become a columnist for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I've also got an article in the works for Newsmax. American Currency Magazine, which is a publication of the Washington Times. American Currency, in point of fact, was created by Dr. Ben Carson, edited by my friend Armstrong Williams, a broadcaster and a media entrepreneur in his own right. So this is what mischief I have been up to ever since the attacks of 9/11. And I think what's probably most frustrating for me is that 9/11, in my judgment, was preventable. I did my very first congressional hearing, and by now I think we're up to somewhere around 15 or 16 congressional hearings that I've testified at before both the House and Senate, most recently before the Senate Judiciary Committee. I testified before that body back in March of last year. So this has been an ongoing process, you know, and what's so infuriating is that I cannot forget, and I'm sure most of you cannot forget, the politicians who stood in front of those microphones in the hours, the days, the weeks, the months after 9/11, we still hear about it, connecting the dots. You know, I've been tempted to send crayons to these idiots. Nobody connected the dots. Why in the world weren't we warned? Well, it's a lie. But then again, that seems to be what we've come to expect from our politicians. Lies, excuses, nonsense. And that's why Congress has a rating that's in the toilet. That's why the administration's approval rating is in the tank, because everyone knows they're being lied to. Perhaps it's hard to figure out where the lies are or how we're being lied to and what the impact is. But I can tell you on the immigration issue, I could write books about the lies, the propaganda, the foolishness. It's just absolutely endless. You know, George Orwell said that political speech gave solidity to pure wind, among other things. And the wind that we seem to get out of the politicians, indeed, is hot air. So when they said right after 9/11, why didn't someone connect the dots, you should know, on May 20th, 1997, 4.5 years before the terror attacks of 9/11, I was one of many people called before the House Immigration Subcommittee to testify on the issue of visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud. And the reason for that hearing were the two terror attacks carried out in 1993 by men from the Middle East who gamed the visa process, some of whom got immigration benefits, including political asylum, Ramzi Youssef, 93 bombing at the Trade Center, Kansi, the guy who pulled off the shooting at the CIA where he killed two CIA officers and wounded three others. He was from Pakistan, lied through his teeth, and got himself or bought himself into a courier service so that he got to drive around Washington and Virginia in a courier truck. And, you know, if you think about FedEx and DHL and the mail service and all those delivery trucks, they're almost invisible to us. It's like a treehouse in the forest. Drive a taxi cab in New York. My gosh, how many yellow cabs are there running around the streets of cities like New York City? So if you can get yourself a taxi or a delivery truck or a van, and you're a bad guy, it provides two things. It provides mobility and it provides camouflage. And you've got cities across the country providing sanctuary for illegal aliens today, states issuing driver's licenses to illegal aliens. Oregon has it up for a referendum. Their legislators passed a driver privilege card, I believe is the term for the document. And in fact, I provided a statement to be handed out to the voters when they go vote, telling them to vote to not implement the program. Why in the world would you provide driver's licenses to people who snuck into the United States? I mean, that's really at the root of this. We're talking about providing people who violate our laws with every incentive imaginable to violate our laws, and we provide them with the opportunity to create new identities in false names and provide them with official documentation. They lie, and our government is willing to swear for it, and I'd like to know why. So let's go back to that hearing in 1997. The Trade Center bombing in 93 killed 6 people, injured over 1,000 people, inflicted over $500 million in damages. This wasn't some firecracker. This wasn't spray paint graffiti. In fact, one of the towers almost came down sideways. And be rest assured, if that tower that stood 110 stories tall, roughly 1,400 feet tall, if it had come down sideways, catastrophic as 9/11 was, the casualty numbers would have been unfathomable. Imagine a building a quarter of a mile high coming down sideways almost instantaneously. Nobody, but nobody, would have gotten out. The building would have collided with other buildings. It would have ruptured gas lines, probably have taken out the seawall, flooding lower Manhattan. It would have been a catastrophe on the scale of something you see in the movies using a CG, you know, computer-generated effects. And it almost happened for real, and as it was, every one of those six lives lost was precious. And I'm certain that some of those 1,000-plus who were injured are not the same. And what was the lesson that we learned? No lesson at all. In fact, shortly after that, the Clinton administration went ahead and implemented a program known as CUSA, Citizenship USA. They ran over 1 million applications for U.S. citizenship through the bureaucratic process faster than you know what goes through a goose. And the people who worked at immigration, and I want to be clear about this, because so often I hear criticism of civil servants, especially among our conservative friends. And by the way, the people that disagree with us are our friends. We are Americans. We've got to stop this vitriolic, vicious attack on each other. This is a divide-and-conquer strategy, and it's as old as the human species. I'm a Democrat. On many issues, you'd call me liberal, and I have no problem with it. I am who I am. But that doesn't mean that the conservatives are my enemy, and it doesn't mean that they're crazy. It just means that we have a disagreement. And the Founding Fathers understood the significance of having disagreements and discussing them. You know, when we think about the First Amendment, everybody always rattles off the big three, I call it, freedom of speech, press, and religion. And certainly those are elements of the First Amendment. But there's two more that almost always gets lost in the shuffle. The right to seek redress of grievances. Folks, if you don't have grievances, you probably are in a coma. And the final component is the right for peaceable assemblage. Peaceable assemblage. Now, why do you think the Founding Fathers did that? They did that out of a recognition of the fact that the democratic process is meaningless unless you can sit down with your friends, neighbors, co-workers, whomever, and have that discussion, have that argument. Scream at each other if you want. All they said, do it peaceably, you know, leave the guns in the holsters, leave the knives in their sheaths, don't hurt each other, but have at it. It's that old expression that you wouldn't eat sausage if you saw how it was made. There's nothing neat or sterile about democracy. Democracy is messy. It's absolutely messy, but that's fine. We need to be able to stand our ground, and maybe we need a stand your ground law, and I'm not talking about firearms now. I'm talking about debate. This name-calling and this inability or unwillingness of our fellow Americans to stand up and disagree with the people who start throwing these horrible accusations around, we've got to start standing our ground. It's not racist to want to enforce the immigration laws. It's not xenophobic to be concerned that people might come into the country who want to do harm to us. It's not an unrealistic concern. It's very much a realistic concern. We saw it in 1993. We saw it on 9/11. We saw it last year at the Boston Marathon. We see it with all the drug trafficking organizations that have set up shops in towns and cities clear across the country. There are people who want to come here and not to share the American dream, but to create the American nightmare. And it's only common sense for Americans to turn around and say, wait a minute, you need to keep the people out who want to hurt us. In point of fact, the United States military's primary mission, when you stop and think about it, if you had to boil it down, the mission, and I don't care if we're talking about the Coast Guard, the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, the Army, their primary mission is to keep America's enemies as far from our shores as possible. It's very simple. How in the world can they carry out that primary, fundamental, reasonable mission when we already have unknown millions of foreign nationals from every country on this planet living in every town and city from coast to coast, border to border, no record of their entry, no way of knowing their true identities or their countries of citizenship or their backgrounds or their affiliations with criminal or terrorist organizations, or what ultimately propelled them across our border to set up shop inside our country. I want to use an analogy. Maybe this helps to focus things, because I love using analogies. Supposing one evening you woke up 1 o'clock in the morning and, you know, you just decided you need to have a hot cup of tea or whatever, and you go downstairs and you go to the kitchen, and on the way to the kitchen, you hear people talking, and you look into the living room, and there's a bunch of, in your living room, having a conversation, sipping some of your Coca-Cola, watching your big screen TV. Would you simply look at them, shrug your shoulders, and go back upstairs, have your cup of tea, and go back to sleep? Or do you think you might want to call the police and ask the police to come on down because you've got intruders in your house? They weren't invited in. They don't belong there. Would you feel comfortable going to sleep upstairs with intruders downstairs in your living room? If you don't think that would be unsettling, I suggest you hang mattresses on your walls and go seek the services of a psychiatrist. I'm all for having America attract people from around the world for tourism, for business, for commerce, for all sorts of legitimate purposes. I think it's wonderful to travel. I think it's wonderful for people to experience America. I certainly know that there are many industries that depend on the money that's generated because of tourism. But there's a world of difference between tourism and people coming here to do us harm. There's a world of difference of having people come to visit and play a game of chess with you or have a conversation or share some wine or a good meal and conversation. People you invite in, friends, neighbors, family. That makes sense. We do it all the time. We're social creatures, this human species of ours. But when we're talking about illegal aliens, it's the equivalent of talking of burglars and trespassers. The difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. And in fact, Mike Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, who I couldn't stand until we got de Blasio, and now I'm starting to become almost, I say this advisedly, almost nostalgic for Mike Bloomberg, but Bloomberg was famous for ranting and raving about why the prosecutors up in the Bronx, one of the boroughs of New York City, weren't prosecuting people who trespassed into public housing because there were real concerns about drug trafficking, rapes, violence, gunfire, all kinds of stuff going on. Bloomberg said, you know, the people that live in those housing projects, they want the police to stop those people who are trespassing and demand of them, who are you, what are you doing here? And he even recommended fingerprinting people who live in the housing projects to make it easier to identify the trespassers. And he said, if you don't go after the trespassers, you're going to bring back the bad old days of crime in New York, because people who trespass are up to no good, and that's an established fact. Well, you know what? Bloomberg was right. If someone's trespassing, the presumption is they're doing it because they are not, they're up to no good. Let's put it that way, to use my mother's expression, may she rest in peace. They're up to no good. But then why was it that Bloomberg couldn't then take that very reasonable, cogent thought process and look at aliens who run our borders and not see them for what they are, trespassers? So it was remarkable. Bloomberg held news conference after news conference, and he railed and he screamed and he would go into a tirade. Why aren't they going after the trespassers in the housing projects? And he was right, very fair. But yet he wanted to give the key to the city to anybody who would trespass on the United States of America. I call this an abject lack of mouth-ear coordination. His own ears couldn't hear what his own mouth was saying. Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor, right, maintains sanctuary policies in New York City. And on at least one occasion, that policy cost a 24-year-old police officer, Robert Machado, his life. As an immigration officer, I did a lot of work with the New York City Police Department, and I'm going to bust a lot of myths for you this evening, and I'm going to help you to see immigration in a way that, if you're not familiar with my program, may be eye-opening. If you are familiar, Some of it's going to be a rehash, but I want to remind you of what we're really looking at, folks. I want you to understand the truth, because the truth is a very dangerous commodity out there these days. The truth is hard to come by in the mainstream media. Although I have to tell you, of late, I've been doing a lot of programs with two news networks that have no problem with the truth. Newsmax TV, One American News Network. In fact, this morning I was on, and they gave me a nice, juicy 10-minute segment. I generally do at least a program a week with my friend J.D. Hayworth, former member of Congress, and somebody who attended an immigration reform caucus hearing I did just 6 weeks after 9/11, which is how I know J.D. So there are some programs out there, but you got to look far and wide to find them. Neil Cavuto does get me on to talk about these issues on his program. But most programs, as Jack Nicholson said, and A Few Good Men, can't handle the truth, or more appropriately, don't want you to have the truth. We're told that if you enforce the immigration laws, community policing will go out the window. It's a lie. Bald-faced lie. I was part of the drug task force for half my career. My career spanned 30 years. From 1988 to around 1991, I was the first immigration agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of the Drug Enforcement Administration in New York City. One of the things that I was responsible for doing was to help the DEA and other organizations cultivate informants, cooperators. And we used immigration law authority to convince people to become cooperators. People who might not otherwise have come forward, for them, the potential to be able to stay in the United States was more valuable than giving money to an informant, because they wanted to stay here. They didn't want to go back home. There are certain visas, in fact, that informants and people who cooperate with the police can get. Ultimately, an S visa can even provide an alien down the road with a green card, even their families, if the information they give is that significant. So when we hear this nonsense, community policing will evaporate if immigration gets involved, is a lie. And I'm here to tell you that I can't even tell you how many informants I helped the FBI, DEA, ATF, and various police departments cultivate using my authority as an immigration agent. So it's lie after lie. We're told that, immigration is a terrible thing because people won't trust police. Foreign nationals from other countries that don't trust the police come from countries where police corruption is endemic. Look at the problems in Mexico, where the police departments have become so corrupted. There are many other countries like that. So when those folks come to this country and they have a problem, they don't want to go to anybody with a gun and a badge because of their own experiences in their home countries. And this has absolutely nothing, and I mean nothing, to do with immigration. It's just one of the lies. There are many lies that we're being told constantly, and most times people don't realize it's a lie. Stossel was very good at lying yesterday. I mean, you want to talk about give me a break? Stossel, give me a break. He actually went after Senator Jeff Sessions, one of my few heroes in the United States Senate. He and Chuck Grassley and David Vitter, there's a few good guys in the Senate. And by the way, I remind you, I'm a liberal Democrat. I'm rattling off names of conservative Republicans. And of course, in the House of Representatives, we have Steve King, who's very much a conservative. And I don't agree with Steve on some of his positions. And that's fine. He knows it, and I know it, and we laugh about it. We're friends. We speak, and we work together, because I will tell you, on the immigration issue, he is a huge asset to America and Americans. My friend Lou Barletta, former mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, a Republican, real good guy, strong moral compass. Gosh, we're fortunate to have those folks in the Congress. So here you had Stossel yesterday jumping up and down and saying that Jeff Sessions was a clueless Republican from Alabama. And then he showed a video of Sessions on the floor of the Senate. And I'm not going to quote it exactly, but the point that he was making was that the U.S. government should be more concerned with providing Americans with jobs and bringing in foreign workers. If that's clueless, I want to know what the color of the sky is in Stossel's world. That's not clueless, folks. It's common sense. In fact, our immigration laws were enacted primarily for two purposes: protect American lives and the jobs of American workers. Prior to the Second World War, the Labor Department ran immigration, and that's how we built the middle class, by making certain that American workers didn't compete with foreign workers who would otherwise drive down wages and compete with them for jobs. Now it's gone the other way around. And when you listen to people like Gates and Zuckerberg and all these others, they make these statements that we educate these kids here in the United States and then we deport them. Well, deport is a very strong word. No one's being deported if they don't violate the law. We don't take a kid out of his graduation ceremony in cap and gown and put him on an airplane and deport him. But they say these things. They say these things. I mean, it's just absolutely remarkable. We no sooner give them a degree than we deport them. No, we want them to go back to their home country with the skills they've acquired and build their countries, build their lives. That's fair. But, you know, here's something that's really remarkable. Why are we educating so many foreign students in the first place? Right now, there's more than a million foreign students in the United States, and not every one of those schools is an institute of higher learning. There's over 9,000 schools authorized through the petition for foreign students. 9,000 schools. I mean, how many of those are Ivy League colleges? There are schools here that teach people how to groom pets, do manicures, cut hair, do woodworking. I mean, do you really think that someone's going to get on an airplane from a third world country and come to America, spend a ton of money, fly halfway around the world to learn how to do a haircut? These are just opportunities for aliens to come to the United States and get lost. And if you don't believe it, DHS just issued a report saying that 58,000, think of that number, 58,000 foreign students have gone missing in America. And there's nobody to look for them, so they're missing. Where are they? Why did they do it? God only knows, and nobody cares. They just came up with the statistic because I guess they were asked by Congress, how's the student program doing? 58,000 gone missing. And then they went on and said something that should really get everybody's attention. They said that of the 6,000 who had gone missing, of the 58,000 who had gone missing, 6,000 were of particular concern. They didn't explain what particular concern meant or why they were of particular concern. But what they did say was that 6,000 of those students who've disappeared created a national security problem, perhaps. Perhaps. See, it's not just the Mexican border, and that's really the root of where I want to go with our conversation today. So you've got 6,000 students of particular concern who were somewhere out there floating around. God only knows. I hope they're not in a garage somewhere putting a bomb together right now. This is not national security. This is national suicide. I don't know how to say it strongly enough. And what we've also seen, like this woman Siddiqui, who got an all-expense-paid scholarship at Brandeis University and MIT, PhD, on the arm, we paid for her. Was arrested and successfully prosecuted for trying to kill our soldiers overseas. She went for a rifle and tried to shoot our soldiers. She has science degrees and in biomed, would know how to put together poisons and toxins and so forth. She is now a convicted terrorist. So the obvious question is, how many people are we educating who might well use the skills they've acquired to kill us? Why is that happening? Saudi Arabia is among the top 10 countries sending us their students in terms of the sheer numbers. And I know there's a lot of good people in Saudi Arabia. Not every Saudi is a terrorist or a radical. But let's also remember the role that Saudi Arabia played in 9/11. Let's remember that ABC News reported not long ago that the family members of the victims of 9/11 were cleared by the courts to sue the Saudis. So the idea that among the top 10 countries sending us their students to Saudi Arabia should give everybody a little cause for pause. Again, what are we doing? What do we call national security? What does national security even mean? Department of Homeland Security? Really? I've come to call DHS the Department of Homeland Surrender. Now, as an agent, one of the things that I did was to do interrogations, as you might imagine. No waterboarding, though, I can promise you that. But all kidding aside, one of the things you look for when you're doing a serious, in-depth interview with somebody who you think may be lying to you is to look for inconsistencies. And that's one of the warning signs, an inconsistency. So I want you to think about the politicians who lie through their teeth, and they say things like, well, we've got to bring in the best and brightest because American schools just don't turn out enough scientists and engineers. We've all heard that statement, haven't we? American schools are deficient. We have to fix our schools, but that could take many years. Alan Greenspan said that when he testified for Chuck Schumer, April 30th, 2009, before the Immigration Subcommittee in the United States Senate. Until we fix the schools, we need to bring in the foreign students. Really, foreign workers, rather. So that's because our schools are so screwed up that even if you get an education in an American school, you're not really going to have what it takes. That's their claim. And then in the next breath, guess what they say? Once we educate these foreign students in our schools here, the ones that are inept at training our own kids, we need to staple green cards onto their diplomas because now they're so qualified to do the work. Well, wait a minute. American kids go to the schools, they come out stupid. But when foreign students go to the schools, they come out brilliant. Is there anybody out there who doesn't think that that's a humongous discrepancy, inconsistency, ridiculous lie? I mean, look, it's obvious what's going on. All these people in Silicon Valley are looking to bring in as many programmers and high-tech workers as they can, not because there's a shortage. Hell, they just laid off 18,000 high-tech workers in Silicon Valley within the past couple of weeks. This is about flooding the market with workers to drive down the wages. In economics, if you take a commodity and put lots of that commodity into the marketplace to drive down the price, that is a crime, and it's known as dumping. Dumping is when you look at supply and demand and decide if you drastically increase the supply, you can drive down the price of a commodity, you can be prosecuted for it. The crime, the street term for it is dumping. I think it actually exists in the law, the term dumping. Is that not what's happening with high-tech workers? See, when people talk about aliens working in the United States, everybody thinks about dishwashers, people mowing lawns, and people doing hard manual labor. And certainly at the bottom rung, we have a lot of that. But immigration also impacts the high-tech industries. Understand the risks that that creates. Putting people into high-tech jobs, and we've seen this with some Chinese spies. They go work for a military contractor, and before a particular military project gets a classification of being top secret or whatever, they steal the secrets and send it back to China. By doing it before the project gets a military security rating, committing espionage against America, at worst, they're simply accused of industrial espionage, which is relatively insignificant compared with espionage involving our military equipment once it's given a specific security classification. They're not foolish. So we have people working in our plants, working on sensitive projects from other countries, and they're here to take the secrets back home with them and perhaps at some point in the future, God forbid, use those secrets against us. We are as foolish as we can get. And we're doing it because corporations and individuals who want to make a lot of money cannot see beyond tomorrow. They're just looking at how much money can I put in my wallet tonight by next week. Forget about next year. That's too far in the future. We are undermining national security. We're undermining the middle class. And now we come to the threat posed by ISIS. Governor Rick Perry of Texas is jumping up and down, and he's been all over TV. The guy that favors the DREAM Act, the guy that favors all these other programs, and now he's jumping up and down and saying, oh, my God, there's terrorists coming across the border. And in fact, there was a hearing a couple of days ago with Jay Johnson, the Secretary of Homeland Security, where Jason Chaffetz hammered him. And he hammered him over the issue of four believed terrorists that were apprehended by the Border Patrol trying to enter the United States along the Mexican border. So this goes back to our friend Perry. He's yelling about terrorists coming across the border, and apparently there were some that were caught. We know there are others that were caught. Anecdotally, we know that this has been going on for quite some time. Of course, not just the Mexican border, and that's important to remember. there's so many ways of entering the U.S. We have 50 border states, not four. But Perry is screaming about this. And then he very often will follow up all of these rants about the terrorists coming across the border, and he's right for being alarmed. Every American should be alarmed. But then he makes statements to the effect that, look, until the administration secures the border, we can't go forward with any kind of comprehensive immigration reform or whatever name he wants to hang on it. It's another glaring piece of idiocy. Because there are terrorists who are here. There are some who did not get caught. In fact, when Chaffetz went after Jay Johnson, he asked him if he knew of any terrorists, and he said, well, not that I could remember, not that I could think of. And you could see that he's trying to do a little soft shoe tap dance. And Chaffetz confronted him and said, well, what about on September 10th, 2014, the day before the anniversary of 9/11, we had four terrorists? Oh, I did hear something. Gee, yeah, maybe that. Yeah, well, we're looking at it. We're thinking about it. We're going to figure this out. Yeah, okay. And then Chaffetz said to him, what kind of operational control do you have over the Mexican border? Now, understand, Jay Johnson is the head of DHS. Under DHS is the U.S. Border Patrol, Customs and Border Protection Inspectors, and I did that equivalent job, by the way, for the first 4 years of my career with the INS, and then ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Back when I was an agent, the job I did is the job that's supposedly done by that group. They're not doing anything about immigration of consequence today. But this is all under Johnson's jurisdiction. So you would think he would know what kind of operational control we have over the border, since he runs the agency that's supposed to secure the border. Johnson absolutely said he didn't know. He had no idea what level of operational control the Border Patrol has over the border, and they answered to him, maybe. And then I was astonished because Chaffetz then said, I have information that the figure is 6%. Did you catch that number? 6%? So that means 94% of the border is a free-for-all. But that does square with reality, because the real measure of border security, the real way of determining that metric, has nothing to do with those doctored arrest statistics that the Border Patrol issues. It has everything to do with the price and availability of heroin and cocaine. Heroin and cocaine are substances that are entirely produced outside the United States. Every gram of heroin, every gram of cocaine present in the United States is graphic evidence of a failure of border security. Heroin is so plentiful that the prices are in the basement. I think sand is more expensive than heroin right now. The epidemic of heroin right now in the United States is so severe that from coast to coast and border to border, police departments are giving their police officers and all sorts of first responders the antidote to heroin overdoses. That's how abundant heroin is in the United States. That's how open our border is. So we've been told that 94% of the border is basically a free-for-all, while we're worried about ISIS coming to America and doing what they were planning to do in Australia. And what were they planning to do in Australia? Carry out beheadings in public places and videotape it and put the videotapes on YouTube. And if you don't think that we face a similar danger here in the United States, you're crazy. Of course we face that danger. But what was also remarkable was that one of the other plans of the ISIS characters that they picked up was to blow up the parliament in Australia. And if these idiots in Congress don't understand the point, let's remember that after 9/11, the members of the Senate and the members of the Congress were specifically told, do not wear those big round pins in your lapel that identify you as a member of Congress, because if there are terrorists out there, that little pin puts a bullseye on your back. What they don't seem to get through their thick skulls, because they're so busy taking bribes, I mean campaign contributions, I have a problem with the language here, forgive me. They want that money. You describe it any way you want. That they've forgotten that they are in more risk, perhaps, than the average American, because they are a leader in the government. What would grab a faster headline? Some poor schmo who's a clerk in a store getting beheaded? Or the chairman of a subcommittee in Congress. Do the math. Think about it. Think about it. Their risk level is higher than the average American's, but they're too greedy, too stupid, too self-absorbed to understand the true nature of the risk that America and they in particular face. They need to wake up. They need to wake up. So anyway, we're being told about this big risk, and there's Jay Johnson not knowing that there's a 6% operational control over our border, that it's a free-for-all, that there are terrorists coming into the United States. Clearly, Perry's concerns are justified. But look at the disconnect that Perry and all these other members of Congress have. And they're all saying the same thing. I don't know if John Boehner is writing the script. I'd like to know who in the Republican Party is writing the script for most of these clowns. Because they all say the same thing. Well, until they secure the border, we can't take care of the people who are here. Folks, some of the people who are here are probably terrorists. Now, even if it's only a half of 1%, we're talking about millions of people. Think what 19 terrorists did on 9/11. Think what Cansey by himself did standing outside the CIA with an AK-47. What in the world is anybody thinking about? So we're going to give people who snuck into the country official identity documents and lawful status, without the capacity to interview them or conduct field investigations. What could possibly go wrong? And we hear all kinds of stupid statements. And most people are buying the stupidity. It doesn't say much for the average American, I guess. Well, if these folks have been here for 8 years, 5 years, 3 years, they come up with whatever number, and they've been paying their taxes. This has nothing to do with taxes, by the way. This isn't about the IRS. They have enough problems over there, don't they, with missing email. I wonder how they can function without a good email system. But in any event, if they've been here for 5 years, how long are they here? Nobody knows. What they will put on their application is whatever the law will require or whatever Obama's executive order will require. There's no way of verifying it. If someone runs the border and has used multiple false names, there is no way of knowing who the person is, what country he or she is from, or how long they've been here. It's just that simple. As an aside, a couple of years ago, I was on my way into, I guess it was Fox News, and they always send a limousine for you, which is very nice because duking it out with the traffic is a major pain in the neck in New York City. And I got into a conversation with the guy who was driving the limo that I was in. And he had an Arabic accent. And we got into this conversation. I said, oh, how long have you been in the United States? He said, oh, I came in with the Reagan amnesty back in 86. And I said, really? I said, that's pretty amazing. I said, so how did you get here? How hard was it? Because I didn't tell him what my background was. And he said, well, you know, back then you just had to say you were a farmer. I said, oh. So you said you were a farmer. He said, sure. I said, what kind of farm did you work on? He started laughing. He said, farmer? I've never even been on a farm. He said, the closest I've been to a farm is Central Park. But he said it didn't matter because everybody knew that America was stupid. And we all thought it was a big joke back in Lebanon. You know, those stupid Americans. The magic word isn't open sesame. It's farmer. So we all wrote down farmer and we all came here. He said, because I said I was a farmer, I brought my wife, my children, my five brothers, my three sisters, their spouses, their kids. He said, you know what? By writing the magic word farmer, I probably brought in 50 or 60 people. Is America great or what? I want to presume that this guy's a good guy, that he doesn't mean us any harm, even if he came from a country that sponsors terrorism. But I want you to understand the lunacy that we're looking at. And look at what it did. Listen to the words that he said to me. And I sat in the back of that car, and I felt as though I was, you know, spinning around on a barbecue. I got so hot under the collar. Americans are stupid. It was a big laugh back in Lebanon. Everybody knew if you wanted to fool Americans, all you had to say was the word farmer. He said, the only English word I learned before I came to America was farmer. Think about that. We're told that the terrorists only have to get it right once. We have to be right 100% of the time. Each and every illegal alien who runs the border who is uninspected, you know, this undocumented business. Of course, undocumented should keep you awake at night. It means that these persons either don't have official identity documents, or maybe don't want you to see them because they know that their true names are on every terror watch list in the world. So that's very important. That's very disconcerting. But they're uninspected. Would you get on an airplane with somebody who was uninspected? So understand what's happening. We are talking about a government that is so out of control, so out of touch with reality, so corrupt, so stupid, so ignorant, so incapable of thinking, that you have politicians on both sides of the aisle willing to provide millions of people with lawful status for violating our laws and talking about it as being earned citizenship. Earned citizenship. If you steal a car, did you earn the registration to the car? Kidding me? And then if you look at the way the news covers the stories, there's a story that I have to go over with you. Fox News reported this September 17th this year. This is just, you know, 2 days ago. The title of the article, this is Fox News in conjunction with Associated Press, and at least they fix it a little bit later on, but catch the headline. New York man accused of trying to recruit and aid ISIS militants. New York man. So, you know, you look at that and you say, New York man, wow, how did they get somebody who's a New Yorker to do this to his own country? So let me start reading this article from Fox. And they do better than most other networks, by the way, to be fair about it. Because I'm sure that CNN or MSNBC would not have covered it in terms of the body of the report. It's good to have that hot tea here. The story starts out by saying this. An upstate New York man has been indicted for allegedly trying to recruit fighters for the Islamic State, paying for their travel, and even buying guns, according to federal prosecutors. Again, how do they describe him? Upstate New York man. Mufid Elfghi, 30, of Rochester, was indicted by a federal grand jury on 3 counts of attempting to provide material support and resources to the group widely known as ISIS that has been designated by the U.S. as a foreign terrorist organization, federal prosecutors said late Tuesday. Elfghi, who was born in Yemen and is a naturalized citizen, of one of the first people accused by the U.S. of recruiting on behalf of ISIS. But the headline is New York man. And very often I've seen news reports talk about terrorists born in other countries as being homegrown. Think of the guy that wanted to blow up the SUV in Times Square, Faisal Shahzad. Many news reports described him as homegrown. He was a U.S. citizen. But if you did a little digging, Faisal Shahzad became a naturalized American roughly a year before he set off that bomb that, thank God, didn't work. Homegrown? Really? This is the stuff that people need to focus on. Think about the story of the Tsarnaev brothers up in Boston, Massachusetts. Came here from Russia as a student, as tourists, the whole family came. And when it was time to go back, they said, political asylum, we can't go back. If we go back, we're in big trouble. They're going to persecute us. They're going to kill us. They're going to do all kinds of terrible things. Technically, that's known as articulating credible fear. I guess nobody did much of an investigation, and nobody followed up on anything. Because as soon as we gave them lawful status, they voluntarily got on airplanes, and guess where they went? Back to Russia. Well, wait a minute. If we sent you back to Russia, you would be in trouble, so you go on your own, and that's okay? Does that make sense to anybody? Immigration missed that. Okay, they missed it. Maybe they're too damn busy, and certainly they don't have the manpower. They only have about 7,000 immigration agents for the whole country. Only a few of them are doing immigration work. You're lucky if half of them are, probably a lot less than half. So maybe you've got 3,000 immigration agents for the entire country. We have almost 40,000 cops in New York City, to put things in perspective. So they're overworked, and they can't figure out what's going on. Okay, that's cool, I get it. But here's the weird part of this. By now, I assure you that every file relating to the Tsarnaev family has been gone over with a magnifying glass. They were looking for them. The FBI is involved. They're doing a prosecution on the one guy that's still alive. I assure you. I mean, part of what I did when I was at the Drug Task Force with the FBI, with DEA, was to go over those files with a fine-tooth comb. If the guy lied on an application, we add the charge. If the guy did anything wrong from an immigration angle, we added the charge. If he was involved with other people, we sought them out and arrested them. I mean, this is a major prosecution. This is a terrorist case. People died. Police officer was killed. Give me a break. This is a serious case. It doesn't get more serious than this. This guy's facing the death penalty. 2 or 3 weeks ago, his sister gets arrested and charged with threatening to blow up an ex-boyfriend. How in the world is she still floating around out there because she came in with her brothers and their parents? Isn't anyone looking at the fact that perhaps she lied on her application for political asylum? Totally ignored. There's an immigration lawyer by the name of Earl Seth David. For 12 years, he practiced law in New York City. Towards the end of his so-called career, everyone started to get very suspicious that he was committing fraud, that he was lying on the applications, that the people that he brought in really didn't have the jobs they claimed they were going to. They suspended his law license as the investigation progressed. This piece of work runs to Canada, and from Canada continues to mail in applications for his clients, law license suspended, and immigration continued to process the applications from a now suspended attorney. Finally, they issue a press release at Immigration and at the Justice Department, and they're bragging. They're excited. Are we great or what? We're phenomenal. We wear red capes and we fly around. We're Superman. And what were they bragging about? Earl Seth David was finally prosecuted. He pleaded guilty along with 25 or 26 co-defendants to one count mail fraud, one count immigration fraud, two criminal counts. But then the report goes on to note that he garnered millions upon millions of dollars in money that he had to pay back to the government, but that he brought in at least 25,000 illegal aliens by smuggling them in, not across the Mexican border, but by lying on a visa application. And there wasn't a single word in anything, in any press release, about any effort to look for the aliens who were smuggled in and who are still presumably floating around out there, brought in by a guy who only got one count each for immigration fraud and mail fraud, even though it involved 25,000 people. I mean, it blows my mind. 25,000 people, two counts out of 25,000 potential counts. Actually, it's more than 25,000. It's 50,000 counts. And, or more, because not only could you have charged him with prosecution for the fraud for each case, but since he conferred with the aliens, there was also should have been a count of conspiracy there. No conspiracy, no nothing, two counts. He'll probably do 2 years in jail and done. This is what passes for effective immigration law enforcement. This is how we do business, even though the 9/11 Commission made it so abundantly clear that immigration fraud is a major factor in the threat of terrorism to the United States. You know, when you see stories like that, it can drive you straight up a wall. You look at it and you say, what are they doing? What kind of federal government do we have? What kind of people are running our government and ignoring what should be the obvious? See, the question that I always like to ask members of Congress, and this is a question you should be asking your congressman, especially if he or she thinks it's a good idea to give people who are here illegally lawful status. Here's the question you should be asking. Why is what you're doing, why isn't the starting point for what you're trying to do the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? You know, I've read this many, many, many times, but I feel compelled to read it again today because I keep looking at this growing threat of ISIS, at the fact that we're committing troops overseas, and we're ignoring what we need to be doing here at home. The 9/11 Commission talked quite a bit about immigration. They did. They talked about a guy by the name of Ali Mohammed. who came here from Egypt legally as an immigrant. He was an army officer in the Egyptian army. He came to be a member of our armed forces. He was an instructor at Fort Bragg in the late 1980s. And he was living the good life. We let him in. Ali Muhammad, as it turned out, according to the 9/11 Commission, page 68, by the way, if you want to look it up. And the 9/11 Commission report, by the way, is free online. If you go to michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, you look at my articles, the links are there to these government reports, and they're free, and they're hundreds of pages, and they're free. But the 9/11 Commission on page 68 talked about Ali Muhammad, and guess what he did in 1993? He was the guy who instructed the bombers at the World Trade Center. So then you have a congressman by the name of Denham in California, who's a damn fool, who wanted to come up with something known as the Enlist Act, take illegal aliens, put them in the military, and give them a pathway to citizenship for joining the military. Really? You want to do that? You want to put foreign nationals in our military, give them guns and proper training, teach them our playbook and strategic processes, and give them access to our military bases, even after the Fort Hood shooting, even after other examples like that? Are you serious? What in the world goes on in this guy's head? I am convinced that Denham flunks the wiggle test, folks. If you want to know what the wiggle test is, it's very simple. You take your left finger, you stick it in your left ear. You take your right finger, you stick that in your right ear. You wiggle your fingertips. If they touch, you flunk the test. Denham, you flunk. But let me get back to this, because the 9/11 Commission talked about the need to look at immigration. But their staff said, you know something? As much as the 9/11 Commission dwelled on this whole issue, they didn't go far enough. The 9/11 Commission also needed to do more about immigration. So since they didn't do as much as we would have liked, we're going to write our own report. So there's a report known as the 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel. And by the way, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. So here is the preface from the 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel. This is how it begins. First word you read. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they're unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Pardon me. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. So just think about that statement. On 9/11, we had 26 visa waiver countries. On March 31st this year, Chile became the 38th visa waiver country. The 9/11 Commission staff report and the 9/11 Commission itself hammered the way we gave visas to aliens. So what did we do? Instead of ending the visa waiver program, which is really what should have happened, we continued it and expanded it. Why? Because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and we got to be careful because there are some local chambers of commerce that are excellent. I've been on programs sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce in Pennsylvania, and they're good people. They're doing the right thing. There are local chambers that are good. But if you want to talk about an evil bunch of bums, it's the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce created something known as the Discover America Partnership, where they've partnered with the hotel, hospitality, travel industries, some manufacturing associations, and they are pushing for eliminating visas, eliminating borders. I had an argument with one of their bozos when I testified at a congressional hearing before the House Immigration Subcommittee several years ago. And there was a recess in the hearing because the members of Congress had to go cast votes for particular legislation. And it was remarkable, because the guy from the chamber came up to me and he said to me, you know, he said, Mr. Cutler, you don't get it. You keep talking about not letting in foreign workers, and you keep talking about securing those borders. Those borders are an impediment to our wealth. I said, yes, and those borders are an impediment to the terrorists and criminals who want to come here and kill us. And he said to me, give me a break. He says, you're costing us money with this nonsense. That's all they could think about. In fact, ABC News, in a similar vein, different topic altogether, is reporting on how the guardrails that we see on the highways are no longer protecting lives because the company allegedly, and I say allegedly, and this is ABC News reporting on this, changed the little end piece on this, on those barriers, and they shrank the piece of metal by a couple of inches. It saves them $2 per piece. And the result is when cars hit the guardrail, instead of being guided to a safe stop, because that piece of metal is too small, people have lost their lives and they've lost their arms and they've lost their legs because they wind up getting sheared by the guardrail so that they could save a couple dollars per part on guardrails clear across the country. This is like the exploding Ford Pinto. I'm all for profit motive, but not where it costs human lives, not where it destroys our middle class, not where it compromises America's national security. These people that are doing it, and I don't care who it is, are not unlike a malignant tumor, and they need to understand that they are endangering the survival of America. And, you know, cancers do very, very well. Cancers are very effective organisms. They become more successful than any organ in its victim's body. They even secrete hormones so that the body grows a network of blood vessels so that the tumor can bathe itself in nutrients. And the Zuckerbergs and the Gateses and all these other thugs that are out there, and that's what they are, they're thugs, they're economic terrorists, if you will, want to bathe themselves in wealth at the expense of the healthy tissue, the average American worker, the average businessman. Because they need ever more. And I'll tell you, they'll be very successful, but God forbid, if this ends the way it does for a victim of a cancerous tumor, let's remember that when the victim of that cancer dies, the tumor dies with it. And there's a cautionary tale for those thugs to think about. Andreessen from Facebook referred to Jeff Sessions as suffering from clinical mental illness for standing with American workers. And I've heard this from other people in the computer industry. It's mental illness to stand with American workers? Really? And these people call themselves American companies? And Stossel goes out there touting, oh, Silicon Valley is wonderful. Not so wonderful, folks. Not so wonderful. They are destroying the lives of the people who worked for them. Dan Rather did a story. You should look it up, or you can see it in my articles or go online. Dan Rather reports, no thanks for everything. Watch that hour-long program. Computer programmers who got fired and replaced by people from India. In fact, one woman who had a PhD, I'm sorry, an MBA in computer science, graduated Phi Beta Kappa, got fired unceremoniously, came to work one day, they said, clean out your office. And Gates wouldn't even give her a referral, which is his tactic, so that Americans don't get the jobs. It's not even only about greed. It's about being anti-American. You know, people immediately say, oh, Gates gives all this money to charity. Nonsense. What Gates is doing is to destroy the incentives for Americans who have those skills that they claim are not available here. There's been a string of reports showing that this is all a lie. In fact, what Gates has done, these masters of the universe, so-called, has to engage in hiring practices that have suppressed American wages. And in fact, CBS News on the radio reported this past week that wages have declined 10% for the average middle-class family, that the average middle-class family is now earning what they did back in 1996, almost 20 years ago. Why is that? Because of the hiring practices of Gates and all these others. It's about hammering wages so they can pocket more profits. And then you've got the politicians who, beyond this issue of border security, and realize how important border security is, that Jay Johnson, the head of DHS, doesn't know what level of security we have on the Mexican border. Really? If he had a job in any other industry and in the private sector, I can't imagine that he'd still have a job. How in the world can you say, I don't know? You're responsible to secure the border and you don't know if it's secure? Well, I guess it's better than Nappy, Napolitano, because she told us the border was never more secure, right? But now, this is the final thing that I want to read to you. And this is something that I also mentioned in my CAPSWeb.org article. It's about the way we process applications to give aliens lawful status in the United States. Page 47 of that 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel, here's one quote, and then I have one more quote. This is page 47. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Worker Program after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida. Think about that limo driver, folks, who said to me, back in Lebanon, throughout the Middle East, throughout the world, everybody knew the magic word was farmer. Farmer. That's all you had to say. Farmer. You were in. This is crazy stuff. Finally, let's get to page 98. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. And so you have Governor Perry jumping up and down and saying, the terrorists are coming, the terrorists are coming. You got to stop them from coming. Well, if we only have 6% operational control, and on one day alone they grabbed four terrorists, how many terrorists didn't they grab? I feel like I'm doing math back in junior high. You know, if Mary has 15 cents and spends a dime on a newspaper and buys a candy bar. All right, so let's do the math. We have 94% free-for-all, and they arrested four terrorists. You know, there might be 40 that got by, maybe more. Who knows? And so once we secure the border, the people who are here are going to get official identity documents? Really? Terrorists engage in what is known as asymmetric warfare. It's called that because what it acknowledges, terrorists and small countries and so forth can't possibly launch a full frontal assault against the U.S. military. Our military is indomitable. I mean, you just don't go up against our armed forces. So asymmetric means that they go behind what they call enemy lines. We call them our borders. And they attack our country from within. That's what happened on 9/11. That's what happened in 93. That's what they're planning to do again, undoubtedly. Now, when soldiers go into combat, they wear camouflage fatigues, and depending on whether they're in a forest or the desert or the Arctic, their camouflage has a pattern that makes it more difficult for them to be seen at a distance. If they're operating on the North Pole or the South Pole, they're wearing all white. If they're operating in the desert, they wear uniforms that are roughly the color of sand. If it's the forests, then the camouflage looks more like the lush, you know, foliage. Camouflage. Terrorists are asymmetrical warriors, if you will. They are enemies of America, not unlike an attacking army. And you know what their camouflage looks like? A sweatshirt, blue jeans, and sneakers. But to really help them blend in, they need to get identity documents and false names. The 9/11 Commission found that the 19 terrorists who attacked us on 9/11 in the aggregate used more than 300 false names. And now we come to this imbecile, de Blasio, the mayor of New York, the city that got hammered the worst on 9/11, who is now engaged in an insane program of providing illegal aliens in New York with identity documents. And if you think that's bizarre, it gets worse. Because the documents that he wants to give them, or that he is giving them, will enable them to go to all of the cultural hotspots in the New York area, and apparently for free. you want to go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you want to go to the Museum of Natural History, whatever you want to do, it's on the arm. We love you. Thank you for running our borders. Thank you for violating our laws that are our first and last line of defense. This is insanity. During the Second World War, a mayor like de Blasio would have been arrested and charged with treason. But then you have a president who doesn't believe we should be enforcing the laws and plays us for a bunch of imbeciles and says, well, I'm not going to enact any kind of executive order while the election is pending because people won't vote for my party. I'll wait till afterwards. Now, he's already told everybody what the intention is. So, number one, it's obvious he knows that the Americans absolutely are 100% against it. But he also thinks we're really damn stupid. Well, if I don't do it now, they'll forget that I'm going to do it afterwards. Really? Let me tell you something, folks. This is very serious stuff. This isn't minor. This isn't about dishwashers. This isn't about being racist or anything else. You know, the accusation, I think I may have said this at the beginning. If I didn't, I'm going to say it now. If I said it before, forgive me, but it bears repeating. The accusation of being anti-immigrant for wanting the laws enforced and the border secured is a lie. The laws that I favor are the laws that enable aliens to legally immigrate to the United States. How in the world can you be anti-immigrant when you support the laws by which aliens legally immigrate? It's insane. It's a false accusation. And as I started out saying earlier, we need to stand our ground. When people make those ridiculous accusations, we need to get in their face. Don't apologize and say, gee, I'm sorry you misunderstood. They didn't misunderstand you. They are intimidating you. And as Americans, we stand our ground. We stand our ground. Because I will tell you, folks, we're being pushed into a corner by this government and by our politicians from both political parties. There's nobody here that's a hero if they're with the party. The Republicans are as bad as the Democrats. The Democrats are as bad as the Republicans. All they want are campaign contributions, which are nothing more than thinly disguised bribes. It's the politicians who stand up against their own parties who are the heroes. I had dinner one day with Lou Barletta, Congressman Barletta from Pennsylvania, former mayor of Hazleton. And I know Lou because way back when he was the mayor, he found to his horror that a Dominican drug gang had set up shop in his community and were killing people. They hadn't had a homicide there in years. Suddenly they had a couple of homicides. And people were furious. In fact, I did an interview with him, or I did a program with him, on C-SPAN. We went to Embry-Riddle University. Mark Bernier's radio show on WNDB sponsored the event. You can go online and see the video. It's permanently posted. Along with, I might add, the hearing where I testified in March of 2002, how two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Sheikh, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months after the attacks of 9/11. Bizarre stuff. You can't make it up. But in any event, Lou enacted his own immigration laws because when he went to the George W. Bush White House, basically they told him, here's a mug with a badge on it, lots of luck, we're not coming to help you. He said, but these people are here illegally and they're killing people and they're selling drugs. And the people over at immigration shrugged their shoulders and said, sorry, Mayor, you're on your own. So he enacted his own ordinances and was promptly sued. I was his final witness at the federal trial. So Lou and I go back quite a ways. And we're good friends, and we get to speak regularly, and I'm always in contact with his staff, great bunch of people. And one day over a meal, I said to Lou, how do you deal with the party? Because I'm sure you're bucking your leadership. And I loved Lou's answer, and I wish this was the answer we would get from everybody who claims to represent us. He said to me, Mike, I have to deal with the party, obviously, but I never forget that it's not the party who sent me to Washington, but the people from my town of Hazleton. My responsibility is to them, not to my party. And if I can't get reelected by backing my own people, the constituents, and all Americans, because at the end of the day, what we do in Washington affects everybody everywhere. He said, if I can't do that, and I can't win re-election, then I'll find something else to do with my time. What's the point to going to Washington and not looking out for the people who sent you? I'm supposed to represent them. I have to tell you, he choked me up. Because I know that with Lou, it wasn't just words. He meant it, and he means it. Steve King said something very similar to me. When you have people marching in lockstep with the party, look out. Because that party doesn't give a damn about the average American. Neither party does. Party does. It's all about power and money and influence. And we are nothing more than a speed bump. That's where we now stand with this government of ours. And that's why we need to stand up to the people who claim to be representing us. The stakes couldn't be higher. It's my contention that you can't be a good parent if you're not involved in politics. If you're a good parent, and I have four of my own kids, and I'm very blessed because they're wonderful kids. But if you have children, we protect them when they're young, and we feed them, and we nourish them, and we nurture them, and we give them good values, hopefully, and we provide them with a safe, hopeful, safe, wholesome environment. And hopefully we inculcate in them a sense of morality and decency and fairness, and with the motivation to do well and excel as well. You know, it's a balance. Life is supposed to be a balance. But what is the point to all of that if at the end of the day our country is blown up by terrorists? What's the point to that if they go to school and graduate with honors and can't get a job? What was the point of sending them to college if they have degrees up the wazoo and can't get a job because people from India who will work for half the wages are taking the jobs that our American kids should be getting? We have a severe problem with violence in America today. And when a guy like Zuckerberg can come out and have a hackathon, which he did, where he taught illegal alien kids how to write computer code, and the prerequisite was you had to be an alien illegally present in the United States, what's the message there? Why wouldn't you do this for an American child, especially a child living in poverty? And I confronted a chairman of one of the powerful committees in Washington, and the guy had no real answer for me. You know, as an agent, we got to see it all. I went into buildings where there were rats running around the building that were bigger than cats, where these kids went to bed at night and woke up with insects in their bed, bugs all over the place, where the stench of poverty hung in the air. They went to bed hungry. There was no heat in the winter, no air conditioning in the summer. The question isn't what would a child be willing to do to get out of that situation. It's what wouldn't he or she be willing to do. And if you don't provide legitimate opportunities for children in that situation, they will turn to crime. They will turn to violence. They're desperate, and they're stymied every which way. There's nobody behind them, and they need to have that hand out. Or get a hand up, rather, to pull them out of poverty if they're willing to make the effort. I would much rather build more schools than more prisons. But if we keep bringing in foreign workers and educating foreign students and ignoring our own kids, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. You take care of your own first. When there's a building fire, a boat capsizes, there's some kind of a calamity, and you always see the parent racing into that building, risking his or her life to save their child, it's the most natural instinct in the world to save your child. Could you imagine someone criticizing somebody? What do you mean you saved your own son? You should have saved someone else's kid. Nobody would dream of saying that. Certainly if you can go back and grab someone else's child on a second or third trip, of course you're going to do that. But let's be realistic. In a life or death situation, we save our own children. In a life or death situation, we expect that our government will protect its own citizens. That's the whole point. You know, American Express has a slogan that says membership has its rewards. You would like to think that citizenship has its rewards. Not so much anymore. But in large measure, I blame us. Because, you see, responsible parents who put that kind of effort into raising their children and providing all the opportunities for their kids, and then ignore the political crisis that we're in because of a bunch of crooks, and thieves, and crazy people, and egomaniacs running loose, running amok, doing inestimable damage to us from a perspective of national security and public safety, from a perspective of the destruction, the willful destruction of the middle class. by not being involved in the political process, all of the hard work, the blood, the sweat, the tears, the money, the effort, the hours are going down the drain. The responsibility that we have in this democratic republic of ours, folks, and I don't care if you're, you know, Democrat, Republican, I don't care if you're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party, these issues aren't about left or right, but about right or wrong. Don't tell me you're a good parent if you're not involved in politics. Politics stinks. It's like crawling around in the sewer sometimes. But sometimes, you know, the toilet overflows and you got to do what you got to do. And this toilet is definitely overflowing. And shame on us. Shame on us that we're not involved. That you have people standing online in stores around the world because Apple has a new toy out, a new phone. But ask people to wait in line to vote, and that's too big a deal. There's something terribly twisted with the set of values that we now seem to have, and we call ourselves adults. Too many of our fellow Americans are nothing more than children wearing suits. It's got to change. America is in a tough spot right now. And part of why we're in that mess is because of an abject lack of moral leadership in City Hall around the country, in the state capitals around the country, and certainly in Washington. It's become a cesspool. Perhaps it's appropriate that Capitol Hill was actually built on landfill. I'm counting on all of you to get involved. Elections are coming. Elections are coming very, very soon, and we really need all of you to be involved. You know, I always make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. It's not just a slogan. We are the employees of these people in Washington and elsewhere. Employers have to set the tone, have to make clear to the employees, and the employees include the president, the vice president, the employees include our senators and our members of Congress. And we are lousy employers. If you ran a company this way, you'd be bankrupt. They are either with us or they're against us. The question isn't if they're with the Democrats or the Republicans. And I'm going to say something that may be a little controversial, but I don't mind being controversial. I know there are people who have strong feelings about abortion, about gay rights, about school prayer. I know there's a big divide there. Today, given the magnitude of the existential threats that we face, those issues are trivial. They really are. I know that you may find it hard to accept it, but you need to listen to me. Take your concerns about those issues, put them in a box, put a big bow around the box, and put it on the back shelf. We need leaders in Washington who understand that it's more than just securing our borders and then giving lots of people lawful status. The immigration system must have integrity from top to bottom. You don't reward people for violating the laws. You punish them. It's only in immigration where we stand, where reason is thrown out the window and we stand everything on its ear. They are ramping up campaigns to go after people who use their cell phones and do texting while driving. In fact, the police have now bought a new radar machine detector that can tell not your speed, but if you're texting while driving. And I kind of like that, because anybody who's stupid enough to text and drive should lose their license. But I assure you, there are more people who have cell phones and driver's licenses than there are illegal aliens in the United States, at least so far. Maybe not much longer, the way that folks are running the border like crazy. But you've never heard anybody in law enforcement or any politician say, gee whiz, there are just too many people with driver's licenses and cell phones, we can't do anything about it. No, we're being told if you text and drive, we'll find you and we're going to punish you. Same thing goes for a whole host of laws. It's only in immigration that we're told the solution to people violating the law is to provide the rewards that they were looking for when they ran the border in the first place. This is insane. This is absolutely insane, and it's happening because we're allowing them to get away with this nonsense. We're being told it's about the politicians looking for the Latino vote. I can't imagine a more disgusting and insidious form of profiling. You mean to say that everybody whose last name is Rodriguez or Garcia thinks and votes the same way? It's the same thing about the Jewish vote or the black vote. It's a despicable and disgusting form of profiling. And it's the members of the ethnic immigrant communities who suffer the most violence from transnational criminals, and not just within the Latino community. It's the Russian community, the Asian community, the Jamaican community. I know because I arrested many of those thugs when I did my job for those 30 years. And it's America's minorities who are suffering the worst poverty in decades. Opportunities are being taken from Americans and given to people who shouldn't even be here. It makes no sense. But our opponents are doing this to us because we have been silent. Imagine working for an employer and you come in late and you take a 2-hour lunch and you steal supplies out of the supply cabinet and you go home early and no one says a word. And it just emboldens you to steal more and work less and demand more pay raises. Isn't that kind of like where we are with these alleged representatives? And I put that term in quotes. We need to take a hard look in the mirror and ask ourselves if we, the people, haven't really encouraged, aided, and abetted these politicians who are doing irreparable damage to America, to our future, and most disturbingly, to our children's future. When a guy like Zuckerberg can hold a hackathon for illegal aliens that ignore American kids living in poverty, and can ignore the plight of American men and women in uniform who come home wounded, physically, emotionally, or both, and not think that he should be helping them to develop skills so they could live a decent life now that they're home from the battlefields. Shame on us for allowing that SOB to get away with it. It's got to stop, folks. My dad told me that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. Seems as though we'll accept just about anything these days, doesn't it? When we go to a restaurant, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat, the way we want it prepared. If we don't like it, we send it back to the kitchen. And if that doesn't work, we generally vote with our feet. We walk out the door and we don't return. We need to be no less specific with those politicians who are paid to represent us, we the people. Remember, folks, it's not about left or right, but about right or wrong. I also want you to remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. I'm counting on you to go out there, get your voices heard, and make it clear to these politicians that we're not as stupid as they hope we are. We're not stupid. We just need to be more involved. Great speaking with you. Great visiting with you. See you the same time next week right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. So long.